Hey everybody, it's Lee Milt here and welcome. We have a fantastic interview for you this month. It is someone that I know very dearly and have watched his massive success for a long time. His name is Jim Butler. And if you haven't heard of Jim, you need to know about Jim because he is a serial entrepreneur. He has built four companies from startup phases to over $1 million in revenue. And this, as entrepreneurs and business owners, are the people we want to listen to. He is the author of 7 books and numerous ebooks. Now, if you do know Jim, you probably relate to him because he is very, very famous in the retail bridal industry. And his first retail bridal store went from zero to over $1 million in sales in just 3 years. He also grew another retail business from zero to $1 million in around 18 months. He has helped some of the most respected and largest retailers and businesses across the country literally grow their sales and shatter their previous sales records. He is known as the systems guy. He is a celebrated systems and marketing authority who speaks and trains business owners on how to create rapid and growth in their business. Now, I have known Jim for a number of years. He was in one of my coaching programs, and he has written a book that when I got it, all I could say was, wow. The name of the book is called The System is the Secret: Proven Ways to Implement the Systems That Will Transform and Grow Your Business. And I will share with you, audiences, that I always read all the books that I interview. And this book was a mere, 400 and I believe it's almost just a couple of pages under 500 pages. However, don't let that intimidate you because it's chapter by chapter of some of the most concrete system information that combines the mindset and all entrepreneurial mindset that I have ever seen. And I'm a systems person, so I really loved it. Now, Jim is also the host of something you should sign up for. It's called the Sound Laws of Success podcast, which inspires entrepreneurs to take action in their business through applying these laws. He and his wife, Heather, are the parents of 5 children, so we know he has systems in his life. And his website is soundlawofsuccess.com, which we'll share more about. Now, welcome to our call, Jim.
Thank you so much, Lee. It's an honor to be here.
It is an honor to have you. I mean, I've been watching you over the years, and before we got started, everybody, I asked Jim, I said, how long did it take you to write this incredible book? And he laughed, and he said, my entire life. But would you explain a little bit, because I think the conversation we had going was really good, about, tell our audience how the book got started, what inspired you to do this phenomenal book.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I just wanted to say how much I admire you. I've really studied your great books. One of my favorite books that you've written, obviously, is looking forward to the book you have coming out next year. But Success is the Inside and an Inside Job book on mindset is just a phenomenal book. So if you haven't gotten that book, I'm sure all the people obviously listening to this probably have. But
we would hope.
A great book. And when I was being coached by you in the Peak Performance Program, I really enjoyed that process and learned so much from you, especially on visualization, which I talk about in the last chapter of the book. But really, I kind of put the book together because I've grown my own businesses, I realized that systems are where the business either grows or fails. And when I coach a lot of entrepreneurs, that's the same challenge comes up, that their business is growing really rapidly, and especially as your business grows really rapidly, the systems that you use at the very beginning become outdated very quickly, and you can make mistakes that can be very costly. And so what I wanted to do with the book was kind of go through step by step of, here's the 16 main systems that make up any business, and here's what you need to put in place to do that. And so it took me about a year and a half to organize the material that's in the book, and then write, because I'm busy with other things as well, but just write a little bit every month and then kind of put it together. And so I put the book together with assessments and charts to help people know, here's what to do step by step as you're putting the system together, and here's some things for you to think about that you may not have realized that could cost you big time down the road. And so that's really kind of the mindset behind why I put it together, was most entrepreneurs don't work on systems until it becomes painful, until they lose money. And if you can proactively work on these systems, as you grow your business, you're going to be in a lot better place than you would be if you just kind of figured it out as you go along. So that's kind of why I put it together. Because I think everybody knows that systems are important. I think I've read the E-Myth. I think most people have read the E-Myth by Michael Gerber, which is a great book. But it doesn't really outline how to do it. And so that's kind of why I wanted to put the book together, was to outline, here's how you build a system, and here's the most important systems in business from my perspective.
Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper into, what is the psychological hang-up for most business owners and entrepreneurs on not creating systems or updating their systems? I mean, there has to be a deep issue, and I have some thoughts, so I wanted to hear yours.
Well, I think what mostly it is, it's not probably the funnest work, but most entrepreneurs feel too busy. They're consumed with working in their business, and so they don't take enough time and focus to prioritize working on their business and making it better. I think probably the best example I've ever heard of this was from Hiram Smith, who was the co-founder of the Franklin Covey Company, which is a time management productivity company. And he asked some people why they weren't being more productive and asked them why they weren't using the strategies that he taught. And he was talking about these great books that he'd been reading on time management, and he'd even written a book on time management. And why isn't it that you aren't reading this book or aren't studying these different principles? And someone in the audience said this. He said, well, books don't ring. And I just love that statement, because systems don't ring either. You know, you don't ring until after you've lost money. And so most people won't work on it or do it because they're constantly interrupted by the ringing phone, the text messages, or whatever it is that's consuming them, and they get so busy because of that. So I think that's a big part of it. I had a conversation recently with an entrepreneur who told me he was really frustrated because he was spending all of his time working on proposals and then answering questions from clients. And so as a result, he wasn't taking any time for lead flow management. And so as a result, he was busy working with the clients he had, but he wasn't growing his business to the next level. And that's a phase of business growth you can get into, that you get so consumed in the business that over time your business declines because you're not working on growing the business. You're actually working on the next step of it.
Yes.
So I think that's a really common problem, that people get consumed in that. And so if you, like lead flow, you got to work on it every day if you want to have your business continually grow. So that's just a couple of thoughts I'd have on that. The systems don't ring, and so as a result, people don't take time to do it until it's costly.
I am so on board with that, Jim, because from dealing with entrepreneurs all these years, I think people have fantastic intentions. It's just their ability to schedule the actual follow-up to create the systems. So because I travel so much as a professional speaker, one of the things I learned many, many years ago is I would not have a business if I relied on my staff to create the systems. As good as my staff were, their personality is to follow directions. Their personality is not to take a leadership role and create it. And if anybody ever came from the corporate world where everybody's main job is to keep their job, right, that they don't want to do anything that's going to ruffle feathers. So what I learned is when we had to do something, we had to create a system from it right then, because I want it to be repeatable. I want if the person who's working for me gets hit by a bus, that the next person has a written system out. And that's why I created the assistant training program that I have for entrepreneurs, because I took 5 years of my work and all the systems I had and created that for other entrepreneurs who are very bad trainers. So I'm a very big systems person. Anytime we do something, we have to make sure everybody in my staff knows how to do it. So the fact that you've created a book that literally walks people through, I mean, I'm looking through the book now, I mean, explains each step. And not only should the business owner be reading your book, but they should be taking parts of it and having office meetings with sections of your book with their own staff. And I'm not sure if you've utilized that yet, but, I mean, there's a lot of what I call office meetings inside your book.
Right. So, ways to kind of start the conversation about, here's what we need to do, and then here's step-by-step how to do it. kind of outlining in that way.
Exactly. And then and staff people will take an outline like that and run with it, but don't ask them to come up with it. Even if they do it, they don't seem to know how to totally communicate it. So, systems are so important. Another question I had for you, in your book, The System is the Secret, you talk about 16 very, very specific systems, and I really like these. So in your view, which systems are clearly the most important for entrepreneurs to put in place, and why should they put them in place?
Well, I think that it goes back to this issue. Is the ones that are most important to put in place are the ones that are going to make you money and the ones that are going to prevent you from losing money. And so for each entrepreneur, that might be a little bit different. Maybe you're growing your business. For example, you think about customer service stories you hear in the news sometimes where an airline doesn't do something and on the blowback that's on social media is immense and it costs the company a lot of money. So that's something that should be obviously immediately implemented and fixed in a situation like that. But from my perspective, I think the most important lead flow systems, especially from my perspective as a small business owner who's grown four businesses from the startup phase to over $1 million in revenues, you've got to have good sales systems. You have to have good marketing systems. That's really where it starts, because if you don't have, especially a good lead generation system, both inbound and outbound, you're really not going to be able to bring people in the door into your marketing funnel so you can actually sell them a product or a service. But I think that sales is the most important one. I started in sales. I didn't know anything about it. I actually talk about this in the introduction of my book. When I first got into sales, I stunk at it. I was terrible. Our family nearly starved to death while I was trying to figure out how to do it. I couldn't afford to buy the books, so I'd go to Barnes & Noble and sit there and take notes every night when I went home. And then I tried other ideas the next day, and I started getting really, really good at selling because I read over 60 books my first year in selling. I made little flashcards of all the different objections that came up. I practiced it over and over again because I wanted to figure out how to get it down. And I realized that selling is a system. There's a proven way, if you just follow the steps, that people will say yes at the end and buy your product or service. And so that's really, really important, because if you put the marketing system in place first before you have the sales system, you might run a lot of people through your business and not sell a lot. That's why I think sales is really important to get good at first and put those systems in place, and then obviously the marketing system. But it's not like you do one and the other. It's kind of sequentially. You do them both at the same time, you do it simultaneously. You put those two systems in place, and then the other ones you work on as you can, but you have to schedule time to work on it. You have to say, I'm going to work on systems every Tuesday or every Wednesday for 90 minutes or for two 90-minute blocks, for example, during the week. I'm going to work on systems development. And here's where this is what's costing me the most money right now, and here's where I have an opportunity to make more money right now. And that's if you have one day a week where you work on opportunities and one day to fix problems that are costing you money, that's a good way to break it down. But that's probably the most important way to kind of set it up that way. And one of the things I did in the book was there's three sections to the book. So the first section is all about why you need systems. The second section is about the 16 systems that I identify what to do. And then the last section of the book is, now that you know what the systems are, here's the secrets of implementation. Here's how you get things done. And I think that's a really important skill, to know how to actually put those things into action. Or, like you said, have those staff meetings where you're making sure that what you want happening in your business actually does happen.
Well, I really like that, because implementation really is the magic word. There's a lot of talk with people and a lot of great intentions, as we said earlier, but the actual implementation of getting your system into place. And first, I want to compliment you on, even when you didn't have the resources, you found a way, to go to and learn on how to sell, and that you were so dedicated by that. That, to me, Jim, is really the distinguishing points between successful people and wannabe people to be successful, is that successful people just find solutions. They may not have the resources, and they may not have the advantages other people have, but they, the old saying is, if there is no wind, row. You rowed a lot to get where you are. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you find a way to get things done. I think successful people have that mindset. I think mindset is so important that as you talk about success, it's an inside job. It doesn't matter what the obstacle is, you're going to overcome it because you care about the result, you care about the goal, and you're going to work hard to make that happen no matter what.
And the other thing that we have in common, is Dan Kennedy, the usums here, is that if there is a problem, we always know there's a solution. We don't feel overwhelmed by the problem, and we just, you know, we internally know if there's a problem, there is a solution. Somebody knows the answer to this. I just have to find the right resource, the right book, the right program, the right person who can give me answers. Whereas civilians, as I jokingly call people, you know, they just give up when there is a problem. And I do believe that sometimes that as business owners, as entrepreneurs, that our staff will talk us out of things. So I really always let people know that when you know something's work, whether as and Jim, you've been in the room when all this was, these things were discussed, where, you know, our entrepreneur advertising looks very different from corporate advertising, and people,
right, absolutely.
People try to talk you out of, oh, that's ugly or it's not attractive. But you and your gut know what's right. You have to do what's right for you, not what other people think is right. And you allude to that in your book a lot about, you know, listening to yourself. Also in your book in chapter 2, you talk about blind spots and surprises in business. What can business owners do better to prepare for the unexpected events in their business?
Well, I think this is such an important area that we all have blind spots. You think there's an area that you've got figured out, or you have a system you have put together, and then some situation that you would never imagine in a million years comes up, and it hits you from behind. And sometimes, just like a blind spot, if you're getting tackled by someone and you don't see that person coming, can really hurt you. You can get seriously injured. And in a business, you can measure those injuries, again, by making money or losing money. And if it's causing you to lose money, or you just damage a part of your business that isn't there, that, like, for example, a cash flow situation, all of a sudden one of your big clients disappears or goes away or goes to a competitor, that cash flow area or ups and downs in your cash flow can really put a hamper on that. So I think that one of the things I talk about in the book is that, you know, looking at what those are and taking the time to proactively plan and say, you know what, here's some situations that I don't know the answer to right now, but I should know the answer to this. So, for example, like, what do I do if my cash flow goes down? Or what happens if my best clients go to some of my competitors? Or what happens if one of my best employees leaves? Or what do I do if something that is working really, really well right now to generate leads all of a sudden is no longer there? Or what happens if a customer complains about this and starts spreading it on social media and it starts hurting other clients? Or what am I doing about being more productive and making sure every member of my team is more productive? You know, those kinds of things. I think the blind spot thing is having good people around you who can recognize when someone's trying to tackle you and warn you about those kinds of things is important, but also that can help you up off the ground when your face is planted into the dirt pretty good. You know, we all stumble, we all fall. And some of us, when we fall hard, it's nice to have a coach or someone that we can trust that can lift us up and say, hey, you can do it, let me help you out, or here's some things to think about as you get back on track. And so I think that's a really important thing. One of the things I talk about in the book is that you've got to reinvent your business. One of the systems is a system of reinvention, that you've got to take time to think about where's my business going to be 3 years from now, 5 years from now? And I think that people who don't plan or think about the future are doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past, which is going to be, you're going to get blindsided by something. It's just a matter of time. And all business owners have to face that. We all experience failures. We all experience disappointments. But you've got to have a good system in place and have people around you who can support you when you do make mistakes and fall. And if you don't have good follow-up, for example, take some time this week to work on that. Again, look at what is the system in your business that's costing you money or causing you to not have an opportunity to make more money. Look at your opportunities and your weaknesses and think about, what can I do to grow my business in each of these areas? And maybe it's 2 times a week where you work on it for 90 minutes and you say, on Tuesdays I'm going to work on opportunities, on Thursdays I'm going to work on liabilities. And work on that area of your business and turn off your phone, disconnect your phone, whatever you need to do in your office. Don't get online and just focus on, what am I going to do to fix this system? So when I teach other members of my staff, they know how to warn me about these blind spots. Or if you do get hit, don't let yourself get hit again. All of us get hit. It's just, don't let that happen to you again and again and again. Otherwise, you won't get back up at some point.
I so agree with that. I'd like to piggyback on that about blind spots. Many years ago, I owned an electronic background music company. It was a competitor of Muzak. And so my company put in phone systems and intercom systems to large office buildings, places like the airport. And on a Sunday morning one day, I am reading the New York Times. And in it, there was this thing that was invented called the multiple CD player. And at that moment, Jim, I knew that my business was in dire danger because I had people paying for music in their stores. Does that make sense?
Right, absolutely, yeah.
And when the CD player was invented, of course, that wasn't a big deal. It was a one, you know, it was a, you would have to physically go back there and change the unit. But when they started making, six and eight and 12 CD players, all of a sudden, I knew that that was going to literally, eventually put me out of business. I was smart enough and visionary enough to start taking action right away to expand my business into, you know, more installation of phone systems and other electronic things that companies needed. So I could instantly try to put that business for sale because I figured that, you know, if I pumped the business up, I would have a chance of selling it and getting out and starting somewhere else. And so I share that story because all of us are in danger in some way or another of becoming obsolete. And this is a huge blind spot to a lot of people. And once that happened to me, I've been very, very aware in my life of that the slightest invention in technology or the slightest shift can make such a difference in your business. So another example for me is many years I did public seminars. Well, you know, we were all flooded with public seminar brochures. Well, if you'll look in your mailbox today, you will rarely ever see a public seminar. Reason being, they're way too expensive to produce. And they went through a phase. So I realized very quickly after a couple of years, I did public seminars for 6 years, that after 2 years, I needed to start working immediately towards getting out of that business because it would have a cycle about it. So the question I have for you is, what is your blind spot in your current business that something could shift? So, and in your book, Jim, you've alluded to that a little bit. So blind spots are a very important area for us to pay attention to. Okay, Jim, the next question I had for you was systems work, but they're often something that gets put on the back burner. And you've talked about it a little, but what can entrepreneurs do to proactively tackle these tasks that will make them more money?
Well, I think my first piece of advice would be don't wait for the pain. focus on the profits. I think that's where your opportunities really lie. I mean, it goes back to this idea about the blind spots that I remember having a conversation several years ago with someone who was saying, when is it going to be back the way it used to be? You know, when we didn't have the internet for people shopping and looking for a better deal or a better price. And
good
I told her,
that.
I said, it's never coming back. You know, it's never going to go back the way it was. It's going to be different forever. You have to go with that. And so that's what you said is that I think your examples that you shared there are all about don't wait for the pain. Don't wait for the moment where you can't sell the business and you can't get out of it. And look for ways to reinvent yourself and do something new. So systems work, although it's not super sexy work, is the work that builds a foundation for your future growth. And so do you wait for the pain or do you wait for the profits? Or do you create the profits, really? I think that's kind of the thing. One of the things I talk about in the book in chapter 21 actually is a lesson that I had when I was first getting into sales. I had a guy named Brian who was teaching us, and he asked us, why aren't people more successful? Why isn't everybody, you know, financially independent? And he asked everybody in the group why that was, and he came to me. There were six of us in the room being trained by him, and he came to me and I said, I don't know. He said, why aren't you financially independent? I said, well, no one's ever taught me how. And he said, you mean to tell me in this day and age that you don't know how to do this? And the point what he was trying to make was, it really caused me a lot of reflection, was, you know, I've got to take responsibility for my own life. I can't wait for someone else to teach me something. I need to be proactive and go out there and figure this out. I can't let ignorance be an excuse. And so in the book, I talk about how people have four main excuses of why they don't do something. One is ignorance. They say, well, I don't know how. And the book that I've written, The System is a Secret, is about, here's how to do it, so go out and do it now. The second one is indecision. You say, well, I'd like to do that someday, but I just don't know if now is the right time to do it. So you procrastinate or to put it off. And the third I is indifference. Well, I don't need to do that. Right now, everything is going great. My business is wonderful. Everything is great. But one of the things I talk about in the book is that all failure is greased with a slime of indifference. That you don't, it's a slow slide into oblivion and a slow slide into mediocrity when you choose to be indifferent to what matters. And so that's a really important I. And then the last one is the I of the intention. You want to do it. You say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put systems in my business, but you're going to do it someday. And it's not something you have planned or scheduled. So if you don't have it planned or scheduled, guess what? It's not going to happen. You've got to focus on it. You've got to proactively say, you know what? I'm going to put these systems in my place. I'm not going to wait for the pain. I'm going to start building my profits now. And so don't let yourself stunt the growth of your business. I have a quote above my desk. That's a picture. A signed picture of Roger Bannister. My wife gave me for Christmas a couple years ago. And underneath that, I have my favorite quote by him, which is that the man who can drive himself further once the effort gets painful is the man who will win. And there's a picture of him crossing, and he was the first guy, of course, to break the 4-minute mile. And there's a picture that he has signed of him actually crossing, and you can see all the looks of everybody around him, like, oh my gosh, he just broke the 4-minute mile. But on his face is a look of absolute exhaustion, of pain. And I think that's the lesson, that the person who can push themselves once it gets painful, that's the person who's going to win. And so don't wait for the pain. Push yourself past it. And then you can enjoy the rewards that come for those who have pushed through the pain and made that happen and become successful as a result of that.
Well, I love what you just said, and it reinforces the whole concept of there's actual work to be done to be successful.
Right, exactly,
and,
yeah.
And, I know you read Dan Kennedy's work, and Dan and I are great friends, and the one thing that we talk about a lot is there are a lot of people pushing agendas where you don't have to work very much. And I literally interview many, many people, and I either before we start the interview or after chat interview, I always ask them some very intimate questions that may or may not get on the tape. But one of the things I say is, could you give me an accurate description of how many hours you work? And it is frankly shocking how much successful people work, that none of us are working four hours a day or 4 hours a week.
Right, yeah. That's a big myth. That's crazy. Because those guys, even though they say that, even that Tim Ferriss, who wrote the 4-Hour Work Week, I've read interviews with him where he works and works and works, and then he goes on a break for a while. But while he's working, there's no question about that.
Yeah, and focused, concentrated work will get more done than, scattered stuff altogether. But every person I know, including yourself, you've created, and you talk about goals in your book. You have a very clear goal where you want to go. You are extremely open-minded about, you are just a true lifetime learner. I mean, you've been in my coaching programs. You've been in other people's coaching programs. I mean, you thank a lot of people in your book. You're very grateful for, knowledge from other people. And every successful person I know has a coach. Every successful person I know works a lot more than what average people, and it shows up in our life. So for everybody listening today, there's an old quote I really like. It's called, there are 7 days in a week, and some day isn't one of them.
Right. Absolutely.
So when you're saying someday I'm going to do something, I'm telling you that's never going to happen. Take Jim's advice and suit yourself up with a very clear day. Okay, something you have touched on that I'd like to go in more detail is the word reinvention. And so one of the systems you talk about is reinvention. So why do you believe it is so important to have a process in which you reinvent yourself and your business, and how do you recommend that others go about what some people would consider a daunting task of reinventing yourself?
Well, this is a great question. I think you know, we all have to reinvent ourselves. It's just a matter of time. I don't think anybody ever stays static. Well, at least the successful people don't. They reinvent themselves multiple different ways. And in chapter 17 of the book, actually, is where I talk about reinvention. And one of the things I talk about in that is there was a study that was done a few years ago by IBM. It's the IBM Global CEO Study. And in that study, they interviewed all the top CEOs at this convention, and they found out that 67% of CEOs worldwide believed that their business model was only sustainable for 3 more years. And then the other 31% believed that their current financial model, their current business model, was only sustainable for 5 years. So if you think about that, that's 98% of CEOs globally are saying basically that their current business models are unsustainable for between 3 and 5 years. And only 2% don't know where they're going, or maybe it's less than 3 years. But think about that. That 98% of your, you don't, where, if you're doing the same thing you're doing 5 years from now as you're doing now, and you haven't changed anything, you probably aren't going to be in the same place you're at now. You've got to constantly look at ways to, the market is shifting so fast now, you've got to look at what are people needing? What do people want? How can I deliver results and help to them in a way that's going to help them get the results they're after? Whatever your business is, whether that's delivering a specific product or a service or result, it's the bottom line is the same. You've got to think about how to put that together and reinvent yourself in that way. I think that most people don't want to stare that reality in the face. They don't want to say, hey, you know what? My business is going to be different than it is right now. And that's why you have to have a process, because if you don't force yourself to think about it, it won't get done. Just like the example you gave earlier, when you realize that that's the way that the CD business was changing there, you know, if you didn't take action on that, you would have been waking up the reality that your business had disappeared, that people had gone someplace else. And so it's much better to be proactive and to avoid the pain and say, you know what, I'm going to get to this result because of my intuition or my feeling or my prediction of where I see the market is going, or I've talked with my customers what they want next. And so I think that's really the question, is what do people want next? Now, they've got what you've got now, but what do they want next? And always be thinking about that, so as a result, you're able to continually create new products and services that are going to deliver the results people want, so they're going to want to keep buying things from you.
I am in so much of agreement with that, because everything is changing, and it's changing very fast, and we should all be paying a lot of attention to trends. And if you rest on your laurels and get too comfortable in your business, things can shift overnight, especially if you are in the electronics business or the sales business. I mean, Amazon alone has totally changed the way the world is thinking about buying things. So you work with retail people a lot, and anybody who's an entrepreneur, I highly recommend that you constantly ask your staff to not just work for you, but to be adding to the business, for them to start noticing things, so that if you're not having meetings with your staff on a regular basis, you know, get them involved in making suggestions of new products and new services, and really look at the trends of what you're doing, and how can it be done better, and who else is doing it. And I did a program many years ago that has sold over 1 million copies called Reinvent Yourself. And I'm telling you, people talk about it, but often they won't do anything about it. So this is all about doing, not just thinking. Okay, the next question I had for you was about what was your inspiration in putting together the task list and assessment exercises in your own book? And how can an entrepreneur use these to discover what is missing from their own business? And are there particular places in the book that these are listed? I see them in a lot of different places.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, in section 2 of the book, at the end of every section I talk about the systems, I have an assessment chart where you can measure yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. And then there's also several sections where I have like an exercise where I say A, B, C, D, and F. And here's what you've actually done with this particular system. And I list out a principle, and then you have to say, yes, I'm doing that, or no, I'm not. And facing the stark reality, looking in the mirror and say, you know what, I need to do that better. The reason why I put that together really is because people struggle to know where they're at. You know, it's hard to go anywhere if you're not sure where you're at on the map. And a lot of people really struggle with this. They don't know how to see or observe or sense exactly where they are. And I think a great coach is able to do that, to help you see the your current reality, where you are, what you're doing. And because if you don't have someone who can help you out with that, what happens is you drift along. And then you venture out into an area that you shouldn't, or you tackle a skill that you want to learn, but it's maybe not the right skill or the right area. And it gets you so far off the path that you lose focus or lose the mindset of that. I'll give you an example of that. I had a business several years ago that I had one of my employees, and I was traveling a lot and very busy, and I didn't pay attention to a system that that's why I write about, you know, watch out for the pain or don't wait for the pain, because I experienced this. I had a client order something, and one of my staff members didn't take care of the order properly, and it made a big mistake. It cost me tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, my.
And after that mistake, I came back, and I went through the entire system line by line, and I realized this is where it dropped through the cracks. And I put that in place and made that happen. And so that's really why I put those assessments in there, to say, look, here's something you may not have thought about, but it's going to cost you money if you don't pay attention to it, if you aren't aware of it, if you're not doing something about it. And so I really put those task lists in there to help people have a step-by-step process to say, okay, here's the next step of the process of the system. And the assessments, you can take those over and over again. It's a great way for you to say, how am I doing on this now? Maybe 3 months ago I wasn't very good at this, but now because I've been following these steps, I'm at this place here. I think one last thing I would just say about this is that in the book I talk about there's four different types of challenges that come up in your business. And there are four different categories, I guess, of challenges or issues that could come up. And one of them are things that you anticipate. You know that, for example, if you're a retailer, you know you're going to be really busy during the Christmas season. And you may not be as busy maybe in January or February. So you have to plan for how you're going to survive in those slower months. Or in the summer months, you might not be doing very well. Or there's times you need to add more inventory. So you have to plan ahead and buy that. So when it comes down to that you're going to have that, especially with like you mentioned with Amazon, if people don't have the selection, and Amazon has a massive opportunity for selection right there, that's something you have to face with that. Or if you have an employee who's getting married or who's going to be pregnant, who is pregnant and then going to be going on maternity leave or something like that, you have to anticipate, hey, I've got some time to plan for this, but I need to be prepared for when they're gone to be able to take care of all these different things. The second category is your sudden or unexpected changes. So these are things that maybe you find out one of your employees is stealing from you, or you have to fire somebody, or you find out that your data that you had didn't get backed up and so all of a sudden it all got wiped out or lost or something like that. That wasn't something you were planning on, but now it's a big problem that's going to cost you. And so thinking about those kinds of areas, that's one of the things the assessments do too, is that help you look at and say, you know what, here's something in my business that I may not be thinking about that I might want to delegate to someone else to help me out with that. Then the third category is your crisis situation. These are things that are forced upon you that you didn't really plan on. Maybe there's a cash flow crunch that comes up, or you have a customer service issue that came up, that, like, for example, the airlines I mentioned earlier, that all of a sudden they weren't planning on that, but now it's forced upon them because it's all that's being talked about in the social media space. Or maybe there's a crisis that comes up with your health or with your family. It wasn't something you were planning on, but again, if that comes up, what are you going to do in that situation to help you through that? Or if you have your expenses go up all of a sudden, at a particular, your best-selling product, what are you going to do to be able to preserve your profits so you can continue on to grow? And then the last area is your competitive challenges or your competitive changes. I think one of the things about most business books is they don't talk about competitors. And, you know, you do one thing, but guess what? Your competitor's going to respond to that. Your best competitors are watching you and paying attention to what you're doing. And so if you think that you're operating anywhere or operating in a vacuum, that no one else is paying attention to what you're doing, you're foolishly mistaken, because people are watching you. And you might think that you figured something out that nobody else has, and then you realize, like you mentioned, you see in the news, hey, this company's coming up with something new that's going to completely make my business obsolete, and you've got to pay attention to that. Or maybe you find out one of your best employees is leaving to go to a competitor, or whatever it is. But those are the four categories. And so really what the assessments allow you to do is look at where you're at and ask yourself, sometimes there's 10, sometimes 11 or 12 questions, to think about, how am I doing with this lead generation area of my business, and what can I do to get better at that? And so what I did was I put the both ends of the spectrum down, so you could kind of see where you're, like, for example, under the system, the section on competition, I have one that says on the low side, it would be like, we don't follow our competition. They really have no idea what they're doing on the low end of the spectrum, or the 0 or a 1. And at a 10, we have good knowledge of our competition and their practices and how we stand out from them, as an example of that. Or on the 0 side, for example, be like, I lay awake at night worrying about my business. Whereas on the top side, when the systems are in place, you don't stay awake at night worrying about your business. You know that it's going to continue to operate well regardless of the situation or challenge that comes up. You might have a setback, but because of good systems in place and good people who are following those systems, you're able to get back on track and make sure those mistakes don't hurt you long term.
Very good. Excellent. I know everybody who's listening to this, Jim, wants to know if you fired the employee that cost you thousands of dollars.
I did, yes.
We're laughing about that because.
But the thing is I didn't do it in a mean way. I talk about this actually as a lesson that I learned early in my career. Actually, when I was in college, I worked at a chemistry lab. I actually have a degree in microbiology and chemistry, which I'm definitely not using every day. But one of the things, I worked in this chemistry lab, and I came into the lab when I was cleaning up, and I threw away my boss's experiment that he'd been working on for 3 days. And it cost the company tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, my.
And of course, he was furious, mad about it. But the way he treated me was so kind. And he realized that nothing could be done about it. It had already been thrown away. And it was a big lesson to me. So when I had that happen with my employee, who cost me tens of thousands of dollars, I remember that lesson. And I can be mad and I can scream and I can yell, but it doesn't change the situation. It's already this way. So what can I do to fix it? And I had to stay up a lot of nights. We had to work through the problem to get it fixed and resolved. But and that individual helped us get through that situation too. Even though she helped cause part of that problem, she helped us get through that problem. And then once we were able to get through that crisis mode, then I was able to get back into the hiring mode and focus on that. We were able to do that. But I think that's so important: is when you do make mistakes, learn from it and remember that you can be kind. You don't have to be a jerk about when something bad happens that hurts you or hurts your business.
Well, one of the reasons I asked you that is, and I cannot remember, it was an IBM person, but they said there was a story about one of their employees had made a $10,000 mistake, and people wanted to know if he got fired. And I believe the person, the author was Tom Watson?
Yeah, Thomas Watson, right.
Thomas
Watson.
Yeah,
IBM, yeah.
And he said, no, I just spent $10,000 for him to learn that lesson. However, for me, if someone created a $10,000 problem, I would personally have lost a little bit of faith in them. So I would most likely have to let them go. But I do agree with you is that, you know, we have to have class and we have to have kindness in our heart, and that most of people are not making mistakes deliberately. But, you know, sadly those things do happen. In your book, one of your chapters that I really did like was the one about improving personal and team productivity. So, I highly recommend everyone invest in this book, and it is truly an investment because you will be able to take this book and you can read it from the beginning to end if you like, or you can just, like when I first got the book, Jim, I just kind of, you know, looked at the table of contents, picked some chapters I like, read those first, and then went back and started reading. And I always know that that's a book it will become like an office Bible. But another chapter that I really liked was, and you don't hear a lot about this, was chapter 18, systems for balancing work and family. There seems to be a lot of neglect in the entrepreneurial world. There's neglect towards children and family for people who often will become super successful. Now, I know you have 5 kids, so they're not letting you neglect them, I'm sure. But your chapter is very profound. So just share with us some tips because, you know, money and wealth is great and success is wealth, but it's all very shallow without people you love.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, it's hard. Being a business owner, you know, when I first got into business myself, I had someone joke that it must be great to work for yourself now, be in business. I said, yeah, it's great. I get to work half days. I just get to choose which 12 hours of the day it's going to be, you know, and
And, that's good. I like that.
I laugh about that, but it's true. I mean, it's and that toll takes it. I mean, that work, especially if you have a work ethic and you're working hard in your business, that can definitely take a toll on your business. And so you, as you're putting that together, one of the things I talk about in the very beginning of the book is the e-myth thing that you may not implode, but your business will, or your business may not implode, but you do, because you're not taking care of yourself or taking care of your family. And like you said, if you work really hard, but you lose those that are closest to you, that's not going to be great long term. And so, yeah, I have 5 children. I have 3 actually in high school right now. And then I have a 10-and-a-half-year-old and a 9-year-old. So I've definitely got my work cut out for me. And I have an amazing wife who helps a lot with that, too. But I think it's just we discuss our business a lot, but you've got to plan for your family. You've got to take – that's the first thing you should plan. And I think one of the things I talk about in the book is kind of a discovery I've made, and I think most successful people have figured this out, that balance is about counterbalance. You can't be always you can't be guilty. You can't feel guilty. We all do. We feel guilty when we're doing different things. We're working, and then you feel guilty you're not at home. And then when you're home, you feel guilty because you're not working. And you've got to get over that. You've got to say, you know what, I've got 3 hours I can work on my business right now. Then I've got to go take care of this with my family. Or if you have a crisis that comes up and there's your health is threatened, or the health of one of your loved ones is threatened, you figure out a way to reorganize your life so you can spend time with those you love. And I think that's kind of the key lesson there, is you've got to take time to figure out what's most important to me and then plan and prioritize your life around those priorities. It doesn't matter if you say, I believe in prioritization, but you don't spend time prioritizing for those that you love most and those that need your time and your attention. And kids don't spell love. The kids spell love T-I-M-E. They spell it how you interact with them, how you help them, how you talk with them and spend time working with them and enjoy them. And it's a fleeting moment. I mean, that's amazing to me. I have a daughter who's a senior in high school, and then another year she's going to be moving out of the house, and she won't even she'll come back, obviously, but that time is so special and sacred, and I think it's just spending that time to help them and teach them, and so they want to go out there and start their own businesses. My oldest son, he's 16, and he's already started 2 businesses, you know, and I've helped him out with that. And so those are the kinds of things where you can learn and grow together and help each other and have fun, and then they, of course, show hopefully some interest in what you're doing as well. But even if they don't, you can still take time to spend time helping them with the things they are interested in.
Well, I just think that's such an important message. And the other thing that you talked about is, you know, taking care of yourself. You know, we are the business. Ultimately, it is our brain and, you know, us going in and focusing our energy in certain direction and directing people. So I am as guilty as anybody about being a workaholic. And I have to work. I have to actually be very aware of how many hours I'm working a day, because my work is my life. Do you relate to that?
I do, absolutely.
And you know, I've never the only job I've ever had in my life was I was a wild rock and roll disc jockey, and and only did that for a short time because there was no money in that. But we had a good time. But I do remember at the end of the day when I got off my shift from being a wild woman on the air that, you know, I didn't really have anything to think about or worry about because I was super young. And, you know, until the next day when it was my turn to get back on the air. But as an entrepreneur, I mean, it's a 7-day a week. As long as you're awake, your brain is rolling. And all of us need to really take care of ourselves because, again, we are the business. And it is being a visionary. And you talk about this in your book about how important it is to look ahead, to see things. You know, where are we going? What are the trends? But what are also the trends for yourself? So, like, life changes. And, you know, you've just got to have systems for yourself. Like, I'm moving into a new home. And so I've created systems for the new home and you know, file cabinets and all this stuff. And some of my good friends are laughing and like, oh, my God, Lee, what are you doing? I'm like, well, the house in of itself, the brand new house, has to have a system. It's if I'm not here, somebody's got to know where, you know, all the information for the heat pumps are and the security system and who's cleaning the house and where the bills go. So our entire life needs systems. So this is one of the reasons I think everybody should please invest in this book. And one of my last questions for you, Jim, is in your last chapter of the book, you actually talk about how systems can get entrepreneurs from where they are now to where they want to be. So in what ways do you believe focusing on systems can help entrepreneurs grow and transform their business?
Well, I think that it goes back to this issue that you want to look to the system for a solution. I think the example that you had about your house, that our lives are systems, our homes are systems, our family life is a system. And if you look at it that way and you organize it so that you can figure out how to be most effective in that system, because we all make mistakes, we all do things, and that's where we learn how to do things better. And so you obviously have a great system about how to put your house together because you have been through the experience of not, you know how important it is to have your life in order and organized. And if you don't have that, how frustrating and how unhappy you are when that isn't in place, you know. And I think that's why people sometimes who don't have those systems in place, they look at it and say, how can you be so organized or how can you be so focused on that? But it's what really helps you get the results you're after. And if the results are what you're after, you've got to have better systems in place. And so one suggestion I would just give is, going back to the example I gave about, you know, even though I did let that person go, I worked with her first to figure out why the mistake happened, and I had her help us get through that situation because I was in a crisis mode at the time. I couldn't just fire her at that very moment. I needed someone to help us through that situation. And I think that that's important. Is it the thing I've learned since that experience? Like you said, that is a great story that Thomas Watson told about, I've invested all this money in helping you learn the system. I want to have this person continue on. If you believe in the person, you can definitely help them get to the next step. Absolutely, that's right. But what I was going to say was, I think it's important to have a system correction before you have a people correction. The first thing I realized when I made that, and it's true about any mistake that costs money in my business, is I go back and say, where is the hole in the system? If the person is just following the system. And so if I go and yell at the person or I say, hey, you didn't do this right, all that's going to happen is they're going to be mad at me, and the problem still isn't fixed. So if I have the attitude, fix the system first before I do a people correction, or correct the system before I correct the person, then I'm going to make sure that I fix the system first, then retrain that person on the right system. Then if that person leaves or goes, it doesn't matter, but the system is right. And so if that person continues to follow the right system now, we're going to get the results that we're after. And so that's such an important thing. One of the things I talk about in that chapter is about visualization. I've learned a lot, Lee, from you about visualization, especially when we do vision boards and things like that in a peak performance group. But I think that's so important to be able to visualize what you want. And then when you back up to say, how am I going to get there? The system is the secret process that really helps you make that happen and figure that out. And then you can, once you put those things in place, as you make mistakes, fix the system, then the person.
You know what? You should have pens made with that. That is a great statement. The system correction before the help correction, that is actually brilliant. I've never thought of it exactly like that. I am very impressed. I'm officially going to start teaching that. I love that. As you know, I'm a big believer in visualization. And one of the reasons I so believe in visualization is I can work out problems in my mind before I have to physically pay for working them out. And entrepreneurs have to work on their ability to be visionary thinkers. They have to look at what's going on in their business, what's going on in the world, what's going on with their competitors, what's going on with themselves, to analyze, you know, where are we, where are we going, where is the momentum that we're creating. And so I think a lot of people just operate, as you said in the beginning of our call, just from their seat of their pants. And that's because there's a myth that entrepreneurs operate like that. But the truth is, and I just read this somewhere, I'm not even sure where, I think it's Time Magazine, something about that the worst entrepreneurs were the ones who operate from the seat of their pants. the worst entrepreneurs who took risk without really analyzing the risk. That entrepreneurs are seen as we're just big risk takers. But the difference is successful entrepreneurs are very highly intelligent risk takers.
So, absolutely, yeah. And they think about, and they have programs to or they have systems basically in place to mitigate the risk, to minimize that if possible. So someone else might look at it and say, wow, it's really risky you're doing that. But someone who's a great entrepreneur looks at it and says, I'm glad you think that because I'm going to go out and make a lot of money doing this.
Absolutely.
So you have that perspective on that.
Absolutely. I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and just a few weeks ago, they've opened a restaurant in a place that has failed like 12 times. And the restaurant is an American-Swedish breakfast. Now, I'm driving down the road, Jim, and I'm like saying to myself, have these people lost their mind? Because I used to be in commercial real estate, and I really do know location, location, location. It's like the most important thing in a retail. And if a restaurant has been there 12 times and it has failed with just normal, you know, burgers, pizza, this location is doomed. These people they operated from a passion of what they wanted to do versus what the market would actually support.
Right.
And so these people clearly didn't have a coach that would help them. I feel really bad for them because, by the way, their parking lot is empty every day. They won't make it. But their real problem, I believe, is the fact that they didn't have systems in place, someone to bring them to the awakening that, one, this is a bad idea for a restaurant, and secondly, it's a very bad location. So
right.
we all have those blind spots. All right, well, Jim, tell us the best website that we can find you at.
Well, probably the best one is soundlawsofsuccess.com.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful. All right. Well, Jim, you were fantastic. The interview has been great. I will tell everybody that the book is fabulous. Jim is going to allow us some reports from his book, which you can find. So this is Lee Miltier calling it a wrap. I'll talk to you next month. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It was great to have you.